This podcast is a proud member of the Lamb Podcasting Network. Find the network at largeassmovieblogs.com.
Welcome to the Really Awful Movies Podcast, a celebration of low-budget cinema.
Is another apocalyptic prediction about to come true? Winds of death sweep across the world, and whole continents will be cast adrift in an ocean of blood.
Chris, and along with Jeff, we're bringing you the very best and worst of horror, sci-fi, action, exploitation, kung fu, and women in prison movies from the 1970s to today. Be sure and check out reallyawfulmovies.com for reviews, interviews, lists, and terrific movie giveaways. From our downtown Toronto headquarters, here's episode 12B, 50 Shades of Grey. Now, we got to admit, this is not exactly within our wheelhouse, as the budget of this movie, you could probably make at least 50 to 60 of the type of movies we're used to seeing, if not more.
Oh,
maybe
yeah.
100.
I mean, what would Lloyd Kaufman do with the budget of this movie?
One can only hope. In the interest of serving our listeners, mm-hmm. and in the interest of seeing just how much we could endure, because this is really an endurance test.
Oh, yeah. I mean, this is part of the cultural zeitgeist right now. I mm-hmm. mean... 50 Shades of Grey, this is, everyone's talking about it. This is the movie du jour.
And unfortunately, we spent du jour, like, sleeping, you know, suffering through this.
Yeah, we also spent mucho dinero seeing this, too. We saw it in the theater. We just returned. And I think we're both a little worse for wear for the experience.
I was going to say, there's already the term suffrage. Mm-hmm. That term exists, but I was thinking if it didn't exist, it would be like a good portmanteau of, of suffering and bondage put together. That's really all I can think of here. I felt trapped.
Oh yeah, me
by
too.
This, and I felt abused by this movie.
Yeah, I mean, that's a funny thing, because I mean, the movie is about BDSM. Mm-hmm. So I mean, I guess suffice to say, this cast might not be NSFW, because
no.
there are certain themes that they yep. explore, although in the most pedestrian way possible.
milquetoast, I believe, was the yeah, word of the day.
Indeed. And yeah, I mean, seeing that theater, I personally felt like I was...
someone took a riding crop to you.
I felt like I was being beaten in submission. Unlike the heroine of our movie, I was not asked to sign a waiver beforehand.
Oh, well, let's break down the plot here.
Yes.
And, if there's spoilers, we apologize. Mm-hmm. Anyway, there's sort of a businessman who goes by the name of Gray, Christian Gray.
Christian Gray,
which
yep.
it's almost like one of those terrible sitcoms where it's like Raising Hope, where the guy's name is in part is the title. So 50 Shades of Gray, this is the eponymous Gray,
exactly.
Which I just hate. So automatically, again, we went into this knowing nothing about this series.
No, I mean...
Knowing, other than that it was extremely popular.
Yeah. I mean, to the
source material.
To the uninitiated, I mean, you know, I mean, I did do some very preliminary research beforehand, and I found out that this is based on a series of erotic novels, three to be exact, mm-hmm. by British author E.L. James. Now, I believe that's a pseudonym.
I would hope so. I'm embarrassed to attach your name to this thing.
These novels have sold 100 million copies combined worldwide. So somebody's got to be reading this stuff. Somebody's got to be liking this stuff.
It's like the Celine Dion phenomenon, where she's hugely popular, but no one knows a single person who has read her albums.
Well, I mean, okay, you know, I was going to say, I do know a person or two that has read this book, but I want to...
Yeah.
The fear of outing anybody now, might not want to be outed. I mean, this is the movie adaptation of the first book in the series. So this is, I guess this is what this would be like, you know, your standard, like, you know, Lord of the Rings trilogy or Hobbit. This is supposed to be like, you know, the
first Godfather.
Exactly.
So we got this protagonist who's Christian Grey.
Christian Grey.
The eponymous Grey. And he is a young billionaire who is ostensibly running this company. It's a telecom company.
Right.
But he can, at the moment's notice, drop anything and just go anywhere to meet up with this woman.
And be strangely unrecognized.
Yeah.
Considering the fact that he's a multi-billionaire, you know.
27
years old.
And he just wanders around and nobody pays him any attention.
None whatsoever.
I guess this was filmed in Vancouver, but it's meant to be Seattle.
Because I think our heroine lives or goes to the University of British Columbia.
Okay.
Whereas our hero, Mr. Gray, works in Seattle. So mm-hmm. it kind of went back and forth. So,
well, I guess the premise is she's meant to interview him for the campus newspaper. Now we got no disrespect to her, but I believe the actress who's the daughter of Melanie Griffith, she
and
is
Don Johnson.
25 years old.
This is Dakota Johnson, the daughter of Don Johnson and Melanie Griffith, and she plays our heroine Anastasia Steele. Amazing name.
Yeah, right out of a bodice ripper, Harlequin romance. Yep. But she's meant to be a senior in university who's writing for this campus paper.
Yeah,
she looks all of no disrespect. She looks all of 30. Right. She looks like a grad student, and it's absolutely laughable that someone who looks like her would be, and she's so meek and
English lit major who's all like, you know, by Hollywood standards, of course, very
dowdy by Hollywood standards. We almost figured she would be wearing glasses because mm-hmm. that's usually the signifier of someone.
We're waiting for the scene for her to like, you know, unfurl the bun in her hair and whip her head back in the wind, take off those glasses. I was like, oh my god, you're a great beauty
she's,
all along.
She's,
because you have glasses, Chris. They're like the great disguiser. Clark Kent.
Yeah. You know?
It's like, oh man, you look like Superman, except you're wearing those glasses. Yeah. I would not, you know, there you go. Anyway, well, this is sort of like a bit of a tangent, but anyhow.
So, and she preps for this interview in her down market student housing, which she shares with her roommate.
Now,
this is Vancouver.
Okay.
The second most expensive, I believe, city in the world after Hong Kong. They have this spacious, ridiculous, this
loft apartment.
It's meant to be student housing. It looks like it would cost, you know, $2,500 a month for this place.
I'd say $5,000. Now, Chris, remember, she's going to interview Christian Grey on behalf of her roommate.
Yes, because the roommate has come down with something or whatever. They don't really...
Anyway, whatever. The movie begins with a very terrible version of Screaming Jay Hawkins, I Put a Spell on You.
Talk about literal. Like, I put a spell on you because you're mine is the lyrics. You know, it was, I guess, made famous by CCR. But I put a spell on you.
But those are great versions. I mean, really, you know? I mean, but this is just like, really, this is like, just, I don't know, like, it's like Norah Jones or somebody like that. And I mean, so maybe her roommate came down with some sort of spell. A spell of something.
A spell of something,
A spell was put on her.
Oh. So the woman goes to interview this guy. She has notes. She's all timid. She goes into this office, which is like, his office is kind of like, I guess we mentioned The Devil Wears Prada.
Exactly,
so every one of his staff is 5'11 and preternaturally stunning. Mm-hmm. And she feels like an ugly duckling, which she is by Hollywood standards, because she's only an 8, whereas they're all 10s.
Right.
She comes in with a, you know, like a little... I don't know, some cami and a sweater vest, and she's all dowdy, and then he's immediately
when she walks in, she does a pratfall.
worthy
of the Shockmaster's debut in WCW.
Worthy of the worst rom-com where somebody falls over a couch. And like, so, yeah, and that's supposed to be endearing.
That was endearing, so she gets up, and oh my gosh, she's so klutzy. And
she's so klutzy, and we know she's endearing because... she's an English lit major, mm-hmm. so we know right off the bat that she's virtuous and wholesome and down-to-earth.
How virtuous is yet to be revealed?
Well, it's yet to be revealed. And we know he's a jerk because he's successful and he's a CEO.
Right.
So therefore, we've set our ground rules. Mm-hmm. And I guess they instantly hit it off.
Well, I mean, there's
lots of innuendo.
Yeah,
the plural of innuendo. Innuendo about how he likes to take control.
Yes.
So lots of foreshadowing
indeed.
How he likes to order people around.
Yep.
And he's this big fancy. Maybe he's like an Elon Musk, the guy behind Tesla Motors. Like one of these type, or like Mark Zuckerberg. He's one of these type guys, except ridiculously good looking and like 6'4".
Oh, yeah.
And stuff.
Like at one point, they have this terribly awkward interview, and she goes, you like to take control. And he goes, I exercise control. In all things,
What's that going to mean?
Right?
What could that ever mean?
Right. So I mean, So there's this interview, and in order to afford this this palatial apartment, she does work part time.
Yes, it just and as a undergrad is wont to do,
mm-hmm.
female undergrad, you know, typical jobs. Work at a cafe, work in a bar. No,
she works in a
hardware store.
Store yeah.
Exactly what you'd expect from a 21-year-old.
Yeah, exactly. English lit major, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, her coworkers, the guy is this another like ridiculously good-looking guy, and mm-hmm. she is made, I guess, down market by the fact that she favors plaid, so that automatically makes her less attractive, even though by the standards of anyone walking down the street, she's stunning.
Right.
So, of course, and so in they've walks, set it up. Like, yes. They're from different sides of the tracks, because this guy's a billionaire. She works for, you know, at a hardware store.
It's like the Odd Couple.
Yeah.
Right there.
Who's Walter Matthau? Hey, he walks in because he's sort of stalking
Mr.
her.
Gray.
Mr.
Yes.
Gray comes in, and he needs accoutrements for his lifestyle. He's into BDSM, so he needs rope.
He needs cable ties.
Yeah.
And there's something else he asked for.
Clips, some sort of, and she jokes that, you must be a rapist or something.
Or you must be a serial killer.
In one of the
movie would have been way more interesting if he was a serial killer.
If he was, and I got to admit, midway through, I said, this would be more interesting if it was like American Psycho.
Exactly.
If he just killed this woman.
I know. I wanted this guy to go full Patrick Bateman, and then we would have had a good movie, right? But this was,
yeah, because they're really like, he charms her instantly. And there's really nothing propelling the narrative
forward. Well, the thing is, I mean, honestly, this guy, and he's played by some actor by the name of Jamie Dornan or something.
Never heard of him.
Anyway.
The role was to go to the star of Sons of Anarchy.
Charlie Hunnam.
Charlie Hunnam is like a Welsh actor, I believe.
This dude, honestly, either he's got the best agent in the world, or he just has, you know, a better sense than anybody. He dodged a bullet. I mean, he was originally
He dodged way more bullets than he did in his day job on Sons of Anarchy.
Yeah,
this is a major bullet. I love Sons of Anarchy, but I think, yeah.
He was originally cast to play Christian Grey.
Christian Grey.
You know, obviously, I mean, this is a huge literary property, and whoever was going to play Christian Grey was going to be vaulted into superstardom, and so Hunnam signed on, and, he's a pretty good-looking guy, Charlie Hunnam, right? And he basically, I guess, maybe hadn't read the source material at that point, and...
Or he
just got cold feet, or he just wisened up, you know? And he's like, you know what? No, this is too stupid. I'm not going to do it.
Yeah.
So thank God, Charlie, man, you made one of the best things in the history of mankind, honestly, because this movie's going to do no favors for the careers of those in it. So the hardware store. So basically, we're not going to go through, like, you know, I mean, nothing really happens, you know? I mean,
they hit it off.
But they have some
vanilla sex.
Yeah.
And I think I remarked as well at one point, after seeing her naked for the third or fourth time, like, I'm just sort of sick of it.
It was dull.
It was dull.
It was boring.
Yeah, I was sick of seeing her undressed for the 10th time. Much has been made of how, like, 25 minutes of this film is sex. But apart from her spanking her a few times with a riding crop and tying her up a few times, it's fairly mundane.
Fairly vanilla, man.
Yeah.
I mean, it really was not... I mean, I've seen movies, the sexploitation genre is a genre that I've, delved into. I mean, there are directors such as, like, you know, Sarno or Radley Metzger or Jean Roland or whatever. I mean, these films, I mean, were way more, you know, erotic, way more creative, way more entertaining, and just way better. I mean, this movie, for a movie that's supposed to be some sort of, like, you know, piece of erotic cinema, this was, like, probably the least erotic movie I've seen in my life. Like, I mean, honestly, like, I think there was a preview beforehand for a live-action version of Cinderella.
Yeah, it looked,
that was more erotic than this movie. I mean, honestly...
And we were talking about it earlier, how why would an accomplished guy who's all of... He's again, like Elon Musk or Mark Zuckerberg, who's got the world at his fingertips.
Right.
He's made it as an entrepreneur, founding this nebulous telecom company.
Yeah, exactly.
And what would he have? What interest would he have in some nobody who's accomplished nothing? And she is an undergrad. She's studying English Lit.
Mm-hmm.
She works part-time. And
he takes zero interest in her whatsoever. In her,
he doesn't ask her what her aspirations are. Like, maybe does she have any interest in business? Is she interested in being a writer? Like,
exactly.
We never know anything about what her aspirations are.
No.
And you think a guy who's all about aspirations
would
come up.
Exactly.
Or at least be to her detriment that she has no aspirations. At least, maybe she has none, and maybe she doesn't know where her life leads. It doesn't address this whatsoever.
But at least, you know, I mean, ask that question. You know, find out. If you're wooing somebody, if you're trying to, you know, like, you want to learn a bit more, you
especially
know.
Because during the course of this film, she graduates. And
who is giving the commencement address? Christian Grey.
Yeah, because I guess he's some benefactor to this made-up school, the University of Vancouver.
Yep. Now, I wanted to say, honestly, like, I mean, when he walked into that hardware store and, you know, all of a sudden it's like, oh my God, like, you know, Christian Grey, and, like, you know, everybody, all these women are dropping at their feet, and it's like, you know, fainting with, like, you know, this guy could not have come across more creepy.
Yeah.
Like, even from the very beginning, before we knew what his sort of kinks and predilections were, I mean, this guy just gave off this really, like, forgive me for using this word, this rapey vibe. Like,
yeah. It's disgusting.
Like, just a creep. You know what I mean?
And he's not the least bit charming. So
not at all.
I would think, I mean, I'm not a woman or anything, but his sexual peccadilloes could be at least sort of forgiven if the guy was sort of witty and charming. Neither of these people is witty or charming.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, there was that great line during the interview. It's just coming to me right now where she says, I find you intimidating. And he goes, you should.
You should, yeah. And they never examine that sort of geography of, again, as someone who would be probably at odds with him, both politically, economically. She's clearly studying literature, which is the second most useless undergrad degree.
What is the degree? Philosophy?
I was going to say, like, women's studies or cinema studies. Like,
how about anthropology?
Even that.
African literature?
Anything. Just the most useless thing.
Let's say that most undergraduate degrees are useless. Yeah. Just, like, leave it at that. But anyhow.
Yeah. And he's obviously this, maybe he's a more on the right side of the political spectrum. Maybe he's more libertarian. Maybe they never sort of cross this threshold of, you know, why he's like he is and why she isn't like he is.
No,
and why they'd be at loggerheads over
honestly,
this.
Like,
he buys her a car at one point and she just takes it in stride. Mm-hmm. You'd think, yeah, if there's addressing any sort of class issues, this would be a little odd. And she would say, no, I can't accept such largesse of your $20,000 fucking vehicle.
In a movie, you know, that's supposed to explore, you know, the economy of, like, you know, the power struggle between the submissive and the dominant, and of course him being the dominant, the billionaire. Yeah. I mean, that's sort of like, you know, the allegory for his, I guess, his status in life, and, you know, he's submissive. But I mean, the reality is, I mean, as a character study of any sort, this could not be more shallow. I mean, I've seen wading pools that were deeper than this fucking movie, man.
Yeah, it's
like, there's nothing to it, man.
Well, maybe in their defense, she is probably well off her on her own right. So maybe they just didn't want to delve into any class issues. Maybe she comes from wealth as well.
Then why should she work in a hardware store for kicks?
Well, just everyone needs a part-time job, and she obviously is not. She's living high on the hog because she's got this incredible apartment.
Yeah. So anyway, any more discussion about this? Because honestly, like, it really is shallow. But because I was going to say, I mean, so as they are somewhat superficially, and the whole thing is that he wants her to sign this waiver, this disclaimer, right?
Yeah, the whole linchpin surrounds this weird,
legal
contract
document.
Yeah,
legal document, the whole
boilerplate, the relationship,
because this movie,
and then he orchestrates a meeting, a business meeting to discuss this stupid boilerplate thing where he outlines what he's into. So he likes anal, he likes nipple clips, and then she has to strike out the one she doesn't want.
Anal fisting.
The fisting that she
anal and vaginal fisting. Yes.
Yeah, I guess that comes with a fine print.
Yeah.
She pretty much strikes them off the agreement.
Right.
So the anal and the vaginal fisting is gone, and then I guess they come to some agreement, and so this is all taking place in his place of business.
Right. So
and
I mean,
discussing
I'm all,
fisting, and doesn't he have a company to run?
Exactly.
What kind of the board of directors has got to be pissed with this guy?
Oh, without a doubt, man.
On a moment's notice, he's willing to just drop everything and deal with his two-week-old girlfriend.
I wonder what the shareholders would think if they knew that this was going on in the boardroom discussing anal fisting and vaginal fisting. But anyway.
And she, at one point, I guess, goes to Georgia to visit.
Okay, before we get there, I want to say, I mean, during their negotiations, right? And he asked her, like, because she's, I mean, we have to talk about the naivety of this girl, right?
Oh, my God, yeah.
Yeah.
The naivety, did we mention?
Because, well, before we get to that part, but I mean, you know, I mean, again, okay, she's a undergraduate, collegiate girl. She's got a Google submissive.
Yeah, she has to Google images of submissive.
Yes.
What kind of shelter does she's growing up in Vancouver,
right.
So it's not like she's a hick from the sticks. This is a big city.
She's no
big
from
city.
Muskogee, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, Google, like, what could a submissive mean?
And then she sees this picture of this girl, you know, tied up in, you know, in ropes, and just closes her laptop in horror.
Oh, my God.
My God, the horror, but...
And here's the ultimate spoiler alert. Oh, yeah. Here's the kicker. She is a virgin.
A virgin.
And like I wanted to, you know, I wanted to be like an Andy Warhol film where she says, "I am a virgin," or some kind of vampire thing. She is at 25. She looks 30. So she is an under. Like who is a virgin at her vintage? She's a senior at university. Like, is this still happen? Is this still a thing? Well, he was as aghast as we were.
Yeah. And then, I mean, you know, what he said to her earlier, right?
Because well, there's no backstory that she is maybe religious or traditional. No, she's not traditional.
They don't mention that. She doesn't even mention, like, she just said she's waiting.
There's nothing wrong with being a virgin. At least if you just said, okay, I'm a there's no reference to whatever religious or traditional beliefs she has. She's just a virgin.
She's just a virgin. And, of course, Mr. Gray is aghast, and he takes her into the bedroom. And this is a man that doesn't make love. He said, this was another line I found hilarious. he goes, I don't make love. And my line reading is going to be better than his, okay? I don't make love, I fuck hard.
Yeah. Ooh, yeah.
So he takes her to the bedroom, and, you know, this is supposed to be this incredibly erotic, deflowering scene. I mean, it could not be more, I mean...
Anodyne and pedestrian, they needed to, like, paint a yellow line down her back or something.
Yeah, so exactly. Like, I've seen, like, you know, safety instructional videos and, like, driver's ed that were more erotic than this. So anyway, so basically, he's deflowering her for the first time, and, I mean, I guess this was the movie sort of, like, stabbing symbolism. All of a sudden, the camera pans up, right? She's in bed, you know, being introduced to the wonderful world of erotic pleasure, and all of a sudden the camera pans up to a painting of crashing waves. Like, how much more obvious can you get?
Obvious, you know? We foreshadowed that with the obvious, like, I put a spell on you, and then later with Crazy in Love, because she's crazy in love.
Not Beyonce either, it was some sort of lounge version of that.
Yeah, it might have been Beyonce, but a different version of the song, a slowed down version, and there was, again, you know, I'm disappointed in the boss for relinquishing song rights, but there's snippets of I'm on Fire.
I didn't hear that.
Springsteen. It's because it was on one of your numerous
washer
breaks, where you were spared at least 20 minutes of this crap.
Oh, my Lord.
Yeah, so I put a spell on you. It's Crazy Like That or In Love or whatever the Beyonce song is. Yeah. And, I'm on Fire. It's the most just... pedestrian, banal song choices.
It's kind of funny because, you know, it's interesting. So we're just talking about the music. I was watching the Grammys red carpet, you know, this past weekend, and Annie Lennox was being interviewed, right?
Yeah,
she was there,
and she performed with Hozier for that.
And the interviewer,
great performance.
Yeah, well, that was a good performance. Annie Lennox is, you know, she's a talent. But anyway, the interviewer asked her, "So you got a song on the 50 Shades of Grey soundtrack? That must be exciting." And Annie Lennox goes, "Oh, it's a great song. Yeah." She goes, "So have you read the book? Have you seen the movie yet?" She goes, "It's a great song." Right then and there, she disowned the movie right then and there. It was,
as well you should.
Yeah.
So, on her scale of 1 to 5, with 1 being a must miss and 5 being a must see, what would you give this?
Okay, well, first of all, I mean, this is so difficult to say because, I mean, normally I would say 1. I mean, this is a must miss. And the other thing, too, I mean, Chris, I mean, honestly, like, we wanted this movie to end, right?
Yeah.
Like, it was in
painful
pain.
Yeah.
However, when it ended, it was supposed to be some sort of major cliffhanger.
Yeah.
It was hanging on for part 2. And it could not have been more anticlimactic, right? You know? So, I would say it's a must-miss. But on the other hand, I mean, this is the movie everyone's going to be talking about. I mean,
this is water cooler chat.
Yeah, you know? And I mean, are they going to be talking about how good
and you
it
could
is,
fill a thimble with said water, with the depth.
Oh, you know? Exactly. I don't know what to say, man. Like, I'm going to have to give it, like, I'm going to give it a 2. I mean, this movie was honestly, without a doubt, this is one of the most unpleasant experiences I've ever had in the theater.
Yeah.
It was dull. It was soul-sucking. I walked out, I felt less of a human being just for, like, wasting, you know, 2 hours of my time watching this thing. But I'm not going to say it's a must-miss because, you know, this movie makes the movies we like. This makes a justification for the movies we love. And we're talking about our Miami Connections or Get Evens or, you know, whatever. I mean, you know.
Mm-hmm. Or so Viruses.
Yeah.
And just any movie we might have seen that cost $40,000, which would have been like the budget for like the hummus for the, the rider for the crew on this movie.
What I would not have done to see Brian Bosworth walk into this movie. I mean, I thought Virus was dull. I mean, this was dull.
Yeah.
So I'm saying, like, I'm going to give it a 2 only because I feel like you sort of have to see it just see how
how bad it is.
Yeah, just to have something to talk about. I'll give it a half, like a reluctant half a star.
Half a star. Wow, that's generous.
Yeah,
I mean, I'm generous is what I'm saying.
What did we learn from 50 Shades?
Wow. Well, you know what? I mean, it's funny because once again, like, this movie is supposed to introduce BDSM to a lot of, you know,
to the mainstream, to housefrau.
Housefrau. That's more interesting. Yeah. And you think I'd learn something about BDSM? No, not a thing. She's
kind of judgmental of his lifestyle, considering he bought her a car, and she didn't seem overly distressed to be going through all these kinds of things either. She seemed to enjoy herself
until the very
end.
Yeah, but we won't talk about that. No. We don't want to spoil it too much for those of you that are
spoiled enough.
Eagerly awaiting to see it tonight. Yeah. Apparently, all the evening performances are sold out.
Ooh, yeah.
In advance. What did I learn, Chris? I'll let you start because I'm at a loss right now.
I learned that I really don't like movies whose titles are based on a character, whether it's in a sitcom, as I said, Raising Hope, or movies. Yeah, this guy's Christian Grey, or films where the guy names the title of the movie. And he does say at that point, 50 Shades.
I'm going to stop you. That's what I learned. I learned that Christian Grey is 50 Shades of fucked up.
Oh, okay. Yeah, that's what I forgot. As soon as I heard 50 Shades, it's like, I didn't even want to hear a variant thereof. Yeah. I couldn't take it.
He was 50 Shades of fucked up, and that's where I got this asinine title from, you know? I learned, you know, Chris, I mean, I'll tell you what else I learned. I learned in life, there's not everything is black, not everything is white. There's a lot of shades of gray.
Mm-hmm.
I would say 50 to be precise.
Well, anyway, we'd like to assure our listeners that we're going to return.
We'll be back to our regular scheduled programming.
We're going to enjoy the hell out of movies that are 50 grand, 100 grand. Yeah. Prior to this, the biggest budget we'd encountered, I think, was 6 or 7 million. It might have been for one of the Rob Zombie movies, but generally around 5 to us is like Titanic.
Exactly.
So anyway, we're going to get back to what we know.
Mm-hmm.
And love. This is what neither. So anyway, for more, check out www.reallyawfulmovies.com, and we'll talk to you soon.
Take care.
Thank you.